Today is Tuesday, June 22nd, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Taliban makes political and territorial gains in Afghanistan.
Taliban have been able to capture more than 50 new districts in Afghanistan, and they are mostly in northern and northeastern part of the country.
Plus, EU slams new sanctions on Belarus.
We have adopted today, with respect to Belarus, the largest package of sanctions, listing 86 individuals and entities.
Also, a Hollywood star criticizes international response to militant attacks in the Sahel. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. The Taliban has captured Afghanistan's main border crossing with Tajikistan, the French news agency reports, quoting local officials. This comes as the militants continue to make territorial and political gains as U.S. and international troops pull out after decades of war. Police earlier confirmed that Taliban fighters took control of a key district in Afghanistan's northern Kunduz province and encircled the provincial capital. Fighting around Imam Sahib district began late Sunday, and by midday Monday, the Taliban had overrun the district headquarters and were in control of the police headquarters, said Inamuddin Rahmani, provincial police spokesman. For more, I spoke with Ayaz Gol in VOA's Islamabad Bureau.
The situation on the battlefield is really fluid. What we have is mostly from the Taliban side information about their territorial gains, which are very significant. And we also have been able to get them confirmed from independent sources like journalists in the area that as of today or in the last month or so, Taliban have been able to capture more than 50 new districts in Afghanistan, and they are mostly in northern and northeastern part of the country. And over the last 24 hours, there has been intense fighting for the control of a couple of provincial capitals, like in Kunduz province and in Talokan province. And these are the two Afghan provinces which border Tajikistan, the Central Asian Republic. And there we understand that at this moment, the Taliban have released pictures and videos that they now even control the entry point between Afghanistan and Tajikistan and the border districts and areas. But we just heard an official statement that the Afghan Defense Ministry released that they have been able since last night, three or four districts in that part of Afghanistan, and fighting is still continuing. And there's a lot of casualties being inflicted on both sides.
And what has been the reaction of the U.S. forces or the international forces who are on the verge of leaving Afghanistan?
This was, as you said, was widely anticipated, but we understand from the latest statement by the Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby that the United States is determined to pull out its troops from Afghanistan by September the 11th, and that there has been no change in the policy and that the retrograde process is on pace. That shows that the criticism that the withdrawal of U.S. air support from the Afghan security forces must be slowed down is not really having an impact on the overall plans of the United States to pull out from this long war, which is now in its 20th year. So that has been what the Afghan leadership demanding as of now, that at least the air support should have been in place for the Afghan security forces, because that has played a key role over the years to keep Taliban from these provincial capitals and centers and key districts. So, you know, what we know from the latest situation in terms of how the withdrawal is going, yes, a lot of forces have already withdrawn. NATO is also withdrawing its troops. And it seems that Afghan security forces are being left on their own to try to contain Taliban advances, and they are really struggling in their mission to do so.
And what has been the reaction of the population?
In rural Afghanistan, we know from the beginning that that's where Taliban have controlled areas for a long time, and they have some kind of sympathy. But it is the urban areas of Afghanistan where we definitely see a lot of opposition to these Taliban advances, and that the fears that Taliban may regain control of Afghanistan. And we also now have seen over the last 24 hours that private militia commanders have started gathering, mobilizing their forces to put up some kind of resistance to these Taliban advances. There have been former warlords, you know, making statements through social media that they are now not having any hope from the central government and they are trying to put together some kind of personal resistance to these attacks by the Taliban so that they can defend their territories. And that is very dangerous for the country because that can really take the country back to the kind of civil war and power struggle that had gripped Afghanistan in the 1990s and that enabled the Taliban at that time to sweep to power before they were ousted by the U.S. invasion almost 20 years ago.
That's VOA's Ayaz Gol speaking with me from Islamabad. Turkey is seeking to play a vital role in Afghanistan following the withdrawal of U.S. forces by offering to provide security to Kabul's international airport. But Ankara faces formidable obstacles, as Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul.
Afghanistan'ın dünyaya açılan kapısı, orada bulunan başta Türkiye olmak üzere,
Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu says the operation and security of Afghanistan's Kabul airport are vital, not only to the country, but also to the survival of all diplomatic missions, including Turkey's. Cavusoglu made the comment Sunday at an international meeting at the Turkish sea resort of Antalya. Attending the Antalya meeting, Afghan Foreign Minister Mohammed Hanif Atma said he supports Turkey's offer to provide security to Kabul's airport.
We welcome it and we will support it. We believe that this will be essential for continuation of Turkish and NATO, as well as the international community's support to Afghanistan.
But Atma played down any military role for Pakistan in the Turkish mission. Last week, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, speaking at the NATO summit, said Hungarian and Pakistan forces would assist Turkey in providing security to the Kabul airport. The Taliban has said it opposes any foreign forces remaining in Afghanistan, but Ankara believes it can overcome such opposition. While the Turkish military is part of US-led NATO operations in Afghanistan, it has avoided armed confrontations. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
The Biden administration says it's the Iranian supreme leader who makes decisions following the election of a hardline president who says he will not meet with U.S. President Joe Biden. Ibrahim Raisi could be key to reviving negotiations in the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement. VOA's Caroline Prasuti reports from the White House.
This is Iran's president-elect, Ibrahim Raisi. The ultra-conservative won in a landslide election with a record low turnout. Here's his answer when asked if he's willing to meet with U.S. President Joe Biden.
No.
That did not faze White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
Our view is that there is a decision maker here who, and that has not changed, and it is the supreme leader.
The United States and five other countries are negotiating new terms of the 2015 Iran nuclear pact. But Raisi says Iran's missile program is non-negotiable. He also blames the U.S. for breaking its promises.
You were obligated to lift the sanctions, and you did not. Return and fulfill your commitments. To the Europeans, I say that they should definitely not remain pressured by American policies.
Psaki calls that political bluster and says sanctions reimposed by the former Trump administration are part of discussions to revive the international agreement.
We certainly understand, as we've seen in past rounds of these negotiations, that there will be a range of rhetoric to address political needs at home. We understand that, but our focus remains on these negotiations.
Raisi himself is under U.S. sanctions as a suspect in the 1988 execution of thousands of political prisoners, even though he called himself a defender of human rights in his news conference. Former prisoner Iraj Mezdaki says the new president led the death panels.
He played a very active role in comparison to other members of the Death Commission.
VOA asks Psaki about those sanctions against the president-elect and his country.
The new president will, of course, be held accountable for violations of human rights on his watch going forward. We strongly urge the Iranian government, regardless of who is in power, to release political prisoners, improve respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms for all Iranians.
Raisi is a protege of Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Observers predict he will not rule the country on his own and that significant challenges lie ahead. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News at the White House.
The EU announced a new wave of sanctions on Belarus on Monday in coordination with the U.S., Britain, and Canada. Opposition figure Vyacheslava Tikhanovskaya praised the joint approach. She had earlier met with EU foreign minister to discuss the situation in the country. The sanctions, a response to Minsk's forced landing of a passenger plane last month to arrest a journalist on board, blacklists more officials, lawmakers, and ministers from the administration of President Alexander Lukashenko, whose Air Force intercepted the Ryanair plane flying between Athens and Vilnius on May 23rd in what the West called state piracy. The latest in a series of sanctions imposed since last year's disputed elections expands the EU blacklist of Belarusian government figures to 166 people, including 78 who were blacklisted on Monday. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell comments.
We have adopted today, with respect to Belarus, the largest package of sanctions, listing 86 individuals and entities, and in particular targeting those behind the hijacking of the plane with Mr. Pratasevich on board. These measures were coordinated also with Canada, UK, and US. We have also endorsed options for targeted economic sanctions. We will now aim to adopt them swiftly after the guidance of the European Union Council. We take these kind of decisions because we believe that can help. If we didn't believe it, we wouldn't take it. It's not automatic, it's not sure, but it is a way of putting pressure, and economic sanctions put a lot of pressure. And Ms. Tikhanovskaya has been asking us to take still more sanctions, to froze assets, to affect the state-owned enterprises which are supporting Lukashenko.
That's EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell. North Korea on Tuesday downplayed the possibility of talks with the United States several days after its leader Kim Jong-un hinted at the possibility of dialogue. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
Just last week, Kim Jong-un said he was prepared for both dialogue and confrontation with the United States. Some U.S. officials saw a glimmer of hope in that statement. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said it represented an interesting signal. But on Tuesday, Kim Jong-un's sister shot down any notion Pyongyang was ready to return to talks. She said in state-run media that the U.S. security advisor was showing a wrong expectation about her brother's remarks and added the U.S. may be disappointed in what is to come. It's the latest in a diplomatic dance between North Korea and the Biden administration. The United States says it's open to talks, but in the meantime plans to continue sanctions on North Korea. Sung Kim, the U.S. envoy for North Korea, is visiting Seoul this week.
We continue to hope that the DPRK will respond positively to our outreach and our offer to meet anywhere, anytime, without preconditions. In the meantime, we will continue to implement all UN Security Council resolutions addressing the DPRK. We also urge all UN member states, especially UN Security Council members, to do the same to address the threat posed to the international community by the DPRK.
North Korea has boycotted talks with the U.S. since 2019. At a summit with Kim Jong-un in February of that year, former U.S. President Donald Trump rejected an offer in which North Korea would dismantle a key nuclear complex in exchange for the U.S. lifting most sanctions. Since then, the coronavirus pandemic has upended the equation. North Korea went into a severe lockdown in January 2020, cutting off almost all contact with the outside world. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
The pro-democracy Hong Kong newspaper Apple Daily looked set to close for good by Saturday following police raids and the arrest of executives, a move that rights groups say would undermine the city's reputation as a free and open society as Beijing tightens its grip. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
Reuters saw an internal memo to staff saying the board would decide whether the company continues to operate on Friday. If they decide to shut down, June 26th will be the final edition. Apple Daily is a popular tabloid owned by Laos Next Digital. It was founded 26 years ago and has been a strong critic of the Hong Kong and Beijing governments. Its owner, Jimmy Lai, was arrested under Hong Kong's national security law last year and has had his assets frozen. Last week, police raided the newspaper and arrested senior executives for alleged collusion with a foreign country. Police said dozens of Apple Daily articles were suspected of violating the new security law, making it the first case in which authorities have cited media articles as potentially violating the contentious legislation.
That's Roya Lee of Reuters. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam hit back on Tuesday against criticism of authorities' action against pro-democracy tabloid Apple Daily as attempts to, quote, beautify, unquote, acts that endanger national security. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
Lam told reporters the raid wasn't an attack on the press.
What we are dealing with is neither a news outlet problem nor a news reporting problem. It's a suspicious act of endangering national security. So our action is not attacking press freedom.
Police have said dozens of Apple Daily articles may have violated the city's national security law, a law imposed by China. It marks the first time the law has been leveraged against a media company. Rights groups and Western governments criticized the move and expressed concern for press freedom in the Chinese-ruled city. An advisor to the jailed Apple Daily owner and Beijing critic, Jimmy Lai, told Reuters earlier this week the publication will shut its doors in a matter of days, likely by the end of this week.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. Palestinians and Jewish settlers have hurled stones, chairs, and fireworks at each other overnight in a tense Jerusalem neighborhood where settler groups are trying to evict several Palestinian families. Few threatened evictions fueled protests and clashes in the run-up to last month's 11-day Gaza war. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. As vote counting continues in Ethiopia, several opposition parties complained of irregularities in Monday's election and in some regions staged a boycott. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said he had hoped the national and regional elections would prove the success of democratic reforms, but the opposition boycott, war, ethnic violence, and logistical challenges overshadowed the vote in some regions. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
As counting of the vote began in Ethiopia on Monday, several opposition parties complained of irregularities and in some regions staged a boycott. Nobel Peace Prize winner Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed came to power promising sweeping reforms, lifting a ban on many political parties and releasing tens of thousands of political prisoners. At a polling station, he promised a fair election.
You can see how it is free and fair election. Everybody is here for free, and I hope it will be the best election in our history.
But human rights activists say his gains have been reversed after reports of abuses and a looming famine in the war-ravaged northern region of Tigray. In four of Ethiopia's 10 regions, authorities were unable to hold elections. The election board chief said that in two of the regions that did vote, opposition observers were reportedly chased away from polling stations and some polling agents were beaten and had their badges confiscated. And that's not all. In different areas, polling agents postponed the vote after less than half the ballot papers arrived, while others filed complaints of government intimidation and militia blocking party observers. That intimidation pushed major opposition parties to boycott the vote in Ethiopia's most populous region, Oromia. Regional officials did not return calls seeking comment. However, in other areas, including the capital, voting went peacefully.
That's Libby Hogan of Reuters. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet has issued a stark warning that rising poverty, inequality, injustice, and erosion of democratic values were gravely setting back the course of human rights across the world. Bachelet addressed delegates at the opening of the UN Human Rights Council's three-week session. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In her opening remarks, Bachelet called for action to stop what she called the most wide-reaching and severe cascade of human rights setbacks in our lifetime. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights backed up her assertion by zipping through the human rights records of dozens of countries around the world. No region escaped her withering gaze. She noted the Council would hold special interactive dialogues on several places of specific concern, including Iran, Myanmar, Venezuela, and the occupied Palestinian territories. She expressed alarm at the sharp increase in violence and civilian harm in Afghanistan and warned the imminent withdrawal of international forces was creating fear for the future. She deplored the deterioration of freedoms of expression in Belarus and said reports of continued arbitrary arrests and torture of human rights activists was of great concern.
In the Tigray region of Ethiopia, I'm deeply disturbed by continued reports of serious violation of international humanitarian law and gross human rights violations and abuses against civilians by all parties to the conflict, including extrajudicial executions, arbitrary arrests and detentions, sexual violence against children as well as adults, and forced displacement.
In many other parts of Ethiopia, Bachelet warned alarming incidents of deadly ethnic and intercommunal violence and displacement were increasing polarization to a more dangerous level. She urged dialogue throughout the country to address these grievances. Even powerful permanent members of the UN Security Council did not escape condemnation. The High Commissioner criticized the application of China's national security law in Hong Kong. She noted this was having a chilling impact on the territory's civic and democratic space. She reiterated her request for access to China's Xinjiang region, where an estimated 1 million Uyghur Muslims allegedly are being held in abusive internment camps.
In the Russian Federation, I am dismayed by recent measures that further undermines people's right to express critical views and their ability to take part in the parliamentary election schedule in September. Earlier this month, following close hearings, a court in Moscow ruled that the Anti-Corruption Foundation, led by the imprisoned opposition figure Alexei Navalny, was an extremist organization.
She urged Russia to uphold civil and political rights and to refrain from branding ordinary individuals, journalists, and non-governmental organizations as extremist or foreign agents. Bachelet called for concerted action to recover from these grave human rights setbacks. She said societies must restore systems of justice, reduce inequalities, and lift people out of poverty through human rights-based development to create better, more resilient societies for future generations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Hollywood star Angelina Jolie criticized the international community's response to militant violence in the Sahel as she visited Malian refugees at a camp in Burkina Faso. Neka Chile of Reuters has more.
Hollywood actor Angelina Jolie was in Burkina Faso on Sunday. As a special envoy for the UN's refugee agency, Jolie was visiting the Gudubu camp. It's home for those who fled violence in neighboring Mali.
I'm honored and I'm grateful to be among you, and I bow my head in respect for your courage and for your strength.
The Sahel region has suffered escalating violent attacks by militants linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. Thousands have been killed and millions displaced. Jolie criticized the international community's response.
So it is now that we are at a breaking point. We are broken. The way the international community tried to address this conflict and insecurity is broken. It is erratic, it is unequal, it is built on inherited privilege, it is subject to the whim of political leaders, and it is geared towards the interests of powerful countries, including my own, at the expense of others.
The refugees in Gudubu who escaped insecurity in Mali have found similar circumstances in Burkina Faso. Earlier this month, 132 residents of a village near the border with Niger were killed by insurgents. Onkar Sisi fled Mali in 2012 and now lives in the camp with his 26 family members.
Since I arrived in Burkina Faso, I'm afraid even in Gudubu. We don't sleep at night. It's really hard. Burkina, as well as Mali, is unstable.
Burkina, Boni, Mali, Boni.
Around 1.2 million people are displaced due to the violence in Burkina Faso, which also hosts 22,000 Malian refugees, 11,000 of them at Kidubi.
That's Neka Chile of Reuters. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good evening.